Now, there weren't any conclusions drawn or decisions made at last week's SEC spring meetings, but that doesn't mean that there's not a story there. I think, in fact, the fact that they didn't come up with any decisions really is a story in itself. How does that affect LSU? I want to get into that on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcast, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. You can find us there. You can also find us on YouTube as well. If you would rather watch the podcast, you can throw it up on your smart TV. You can throw it up on your phone. You can throw it up on the go. Whatever you prefer, whichever platform you prefer, you can find us there. Just make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel Locked On LSU in the search bar. Just hit that subscribe button and you won't miss a second of your Locked On LSU content. I'm Caroline Fenton and I'm your host, as I am every day. I graduated from LSU in 2019 and I now do sports talk radio here in Nashville, Tennessee. You can follow me on Twitter at CarolineFenton1. You can also follow the podcast at Locked On LSU Twitter. I'll post my thoughts, my takes, and podcast updates on both of those accounts. Now, I mentioned the SEC spring meetings. There were no hardcore decisions that were made, and those do affect LSU. And I want to get into that. But before we do that, I would be burying the lead and I would be avoiding the elephant in the room if I didn't address LSU's loss to Southern Miss last night. Really, honestly, a heartbreaking loss in the final game of the regional in Hattiesburg. I mean, after this entire weekend of LSU baseball, the cardiac cats, they brought that to a new level. I swear, LSU baseball always tests my patience, my nerves, my anxiety, my adrenaline every single postseason after a wild game, a wild comeback, both on Friday and Saturday nights, one against Kennesaw State on Friday. And I think the biggest thing here was, you know, of course, a loss on Sunday. I kind of came back and thought, okay, this is where LSU really thrives, is on these on-the-line situations in the postseason. We saw that on Friday and Saturday, just two absolute wild comebacks on Friday and Saturday. And I think that's what made kind of the loss so devastating, was all the promise that was there. It came down to a single run. Of course, LSU dropping that game to Southern Miss 8-7 in Hattiesburg on Monday night, Monday afternoon, really. But I look at it like I'm disappointed, because I've said it so many times in the podcast that hosting a regional is an expectation of LSU baseball. That's not what they did this year. Making it past the regional is an expectation of LSU baseball. Even when I counted them out, for example, last season in 2021, they went to the Eugene regional. Oregon had no business beating Oregon, but they did advance to the super regional in Knoxville. Of course, lost to a very talented Tennessee team last year, but just goes to show that, you know, that's kind of the expectation of LSU baseball, is to make it that far in the postseason, to be in a super regional, to be hosting not just a regional, but a super regional. All of that considered, I understand that that's the expectation of LSU baseball. But I think moving, and that's not what they lived up to this year. But there are a couple things to consider here. This bullpen was shallow. There are so few arms, and that's exactly what got them into the trouble against Southern Miss, was while they had the offensive heroics from Dylan Cruz and Kay Doty and Jacob Berry, sometimes that's not enough to make up for the fact that you're playing the fourth game in 4 days in a regional tournament setting. You have no arms left. I believe LSU blew through seven pitchers on Monday night against Southern Miss. I mean, they just don't have a deep enough bullpen, or, be completely honest with you, a talented enough bullpen to be able to blow through that many pitchers and be able to be competitive. Even having one of the best hitters in the country in Dylan Cruz, even having such a clutch guy in Kay Doty, who came in clutch several times over the weekend in this regional in Hattiesburg, sometimes that's just not enough to make up for what you don't have in the bullpen, for what you don't have in your pitching rotation. So I look at that and I say, you know, I know that's the expectation of LSU baseball to do better than that, but they had their bullpen working against them. And I also look at Southern Miss, and I got to give Southern Miss credit. They have some damn good pitchers on that team. They have some very, very talented pitchers. I mentioned on the podcast last week that they had the second best ERA in all of college baseball, only behind Tennessee, who had a sub three ERA. Southern Miss is sitting around like a 3.233 ERA on the season, second best ERA in the country. So I look at that, and that's a very talented bullpen. And I look at how much talent is coming into LSU next year. They have the number one recruiting class in the country. So if you can build upon that, then that's what sets you up for success. So yeah, I'm disappointed. I think throughout this season, there are so many games that LSU lost because of poor defense. And that was another thing that also came to fruition over the weekend as well, especially on Monday night, that, you know, you look at a, you know, very poorly defended bunt. And that's how, you know, that's the difference between a win and a loss. When you give up a run, two runs, I believe it was three runs total given up from two errors. Well, that's the game right there. Whenever you lose by a single run and you give up three just due to poor defense, that's game. So those are the two biggest areas of weakness that I found in LSU baseball this past year. And we saw it throughout the entire season. It's something that you saw flashes of improvement, at least in the defense. But overall, you know, when you're in that tournament setting and it's very much so a grind, you know, your weaknesses are going to come through, especially against a team that really, you know, played their butts off in Southern Miss this past weekend. I think you have to give them credit where credit is due. So I look at those things, and those are the things that LSU needs to be working on in the postseason, or in the offseason, rather, excuse me. That's what they need to be working on in the offseason with such a talented recruiting class coming in and seeing kind of the foundation that Jay Johnson has laid. I mean, I don't think that we give ourselves or this team enough slack. At least I don't. I'm not going to speak for you. I don't think that I've given Jay Johnson enough slack for what he's been able to do as, you know, a first-year head coach. Of course, the talent was there. He had the transfers that came in from Arizona, the players that, you know, he had recruited, that he has established relationships with. But then again, this roster didn't get a lot of time to gel. So while this season came up short of what traditional expectations for LSU baseball is, I look at the two biggest things that could have been the difference in pitching and in defense. If those are the things that you can work on, and when you're bringing in a lot of pitching talent, a lot of just talent in general, in this number one recruiting class next season, I think that LSU baseball has a very bright future, and I believe it's in very good hands. Again, LSU falling in the Hattiesburg Regional in the final game to Southern Miss, 8-7. Southern Miss will advance, and Ole Miss actually will travel to Hattiesburg in the Hattiesburg Super Regional. That's another thing, though, that I'm a little bit disappointed about, is, of course, I'm disappointed in LSU losing. I'm disappointed that we won't get to see, you know, where this team can take themselves, because, I mean, this team, we've seen it this year, and we've seen it historically in the past. LSU baseball in the postseason is just fun. It's just special. It's almost like it has this weird, like, sense of magic around this team that they just, I mean, Friday and Saturday are examples of that. And it has this weird sense of, you know, anything can happen, especially with this team. It's true for any team, but especially, I think, with this team. So I'm bummed that we won't get to see where that would come to fruition later on in this postseason, but I'm also a little bummed that LSU and Ole Miss will not be facing in the Super Regionals. I mean, can you just imagine the electricity and just the buzz around an Ole Miss-LSU Super Regional? Likely, probably would have been hosted in Baton Rouge. No guarantee there, but I mean, I have to believe that that would have been the case. So I'm bummed that we're missing out on that as well. But of course, and you can appreciate the season for what it was. Of course, kind of coming up short of at least my expectations. But I think there's a lot to build on moving forward. And with all this new talent coming in here, I don't think that I'm going to lose much sleep at night about how the future of this LSU baseball team turns out. But it should be a fun tournament to watch the rest of the way. There's been plenty of drama, plenty of chirpiness, a lot of very high-scoring games over the weekend at the regional. So I think we've got some good baseball in store. Of course, our guys aren't in it, but that's okay. We've got some good baseball moving forward. But coming up next, the SEC spring meetings. What came of those meetings? What didn't come of those meetings? And how does that affect LSU? I want to get into that coming up next. But before I do that, I want to tell you about Built Bar. So, I mean, think about like your favorite dessert. and think about like a chewy, chocolatey brownie. Like, how perfect does that sound at the end of a hard day, sitting down on the couch, getting a nice brownie, maybe some ice cream on top, maybe some caramel swirled on top. I mean, it's delicious. But what if I told you that you can have all of that deliciousness, the chewy, chocolatey, caramel deliciousness, plus 17 grams of protein? Kind of doesn't seem real, right? But you are in luck because the caramel brownie Built bars are finally available at built.com right now. And you got to act quick because they are a fan favorite and I don't think they're going to last very long. So forget about dessert, forget about your macros and worrying about the sugar and the calories, because these are actually better than dessert and the macros are unreal. Only 130 calories, 17 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar. So these things are going to keep you full all day long while also replacing kind of that sweet tooth and your regular brownie sweet tooth. And you can replace that with Built's caramel brownie bar. And it's so easy to do. And the best part is they're covered in 100% real chocolate, real chocolate. And with Built Bar, you don't have to sacrifice tasty for healthy. You can have both. All of Built Bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently, provides tons of health benefits. I know a lot of people will take collagen supplements for your hair, for your nails, for your skin. Don't worry about those. You can get that with Built Bar. There are a million reasons that you should try Built Bars, but for now, let's just say that the caramel brownie will rock your world. I promise you. So with Built, tasty is the new healthy. You don't have to sacrifice either of those things. Go to built.com to get your box of caramel brownies now. Now go to built.com, use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Now, I have a very, very important favor to ask of you. Now, we at Locked On have put together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite Locked On podcasts even better. So this is your opportunity to tell us what you like, what you don't like about Locked On podcasts. So go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. I promise it won't take very long. And everyone that completes a survey can qualify for a chance to win one of $10 Ticketmaster gift cards to take our audience survey. So go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. We appreciate your help. Now, let's get into it. The SEC spring meetings wrapped up last week in Destin. And before I get into it, I want to preface this by saying I think it's so hilarious that after the whole Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban debacle, that was something that Greg Sankey had said was, NIL and this whole back and forth is going to be something that we were going to be discussing at SEC spring meetings. You know, we're going to talk about NIL. From what I've heard, I don't think they talked a lick about NIL, because as much as we can talk about NIL, as much as Nick Saban can complain about NIL, as much as Dabo Swinney can complain about how he doesn't think NIL should, you know, how he doesn't think players should get paid, as much as Ryan Day most recently wants to complain about how much money Ohio State's going to need to keep up, as much as all of these coaches want to complain about how much more difficult their jobs are, it's not going away. It's, you know, we can talk all day about, you know, potential, standard rules across the board in NIL. I think that's a fair discussion to have, but it's not going anywhere anytime soon. And as much as Nick Saban wants to complain about it, as much as Jimbo Fisher wants to tout all the money that they are giving in their NIL deals, whether you like it or not, whether you're right in the middle, it's not going anywhere. You know, the Supreme Court unanimously voted that this is what is constitutional, and limiting any amount of money that a player can be paid is unconstitutional. So that's really the meat and potatoes of it. So we can complain about it all day, but it's not going anywhere. So just embrace it. So that aside, instead of talking about NIL, the number one topic of conversation was the scheduling, the future of what the SEC will look like. Now, there weren't any official decisions made. That was, you know, a lot of the topics going into the spring meetings were the options of, you know, sticking with divisions or getting rid of divisions, or a 3-6 model, expanding your SEC schedule one more game to nine, from 8 to 9 games, or a 1-7 model where you have one permanent opponent and 7 rotating opponents. That, of course, the intention of that would be to get teams playing different teams more often. Of course, we cited on the podcast a couple weeks ago how Georgia has yet to travel to College Station since Texas A&M joined the SEC. Texas A&M and Georgia have only played once since 2012, whenever Texas A&M entered the SEC. So Greg Sankey, and honestly, I do too, and I think a lot of SEC fans as a whole would love to see a little bit more shakeup. You know, I'd love to see LSU playing Georgia more often, or Tennessee more often, or, you know, teams in the East more often. I think that it would be more fun that way. But also the traditionalist in me who hates change also just wants to just stay in the SEC West and do it how we've been doing it since Texas A&M and Missouri entered the league. But, you know, those are days of the past. That was the main conversation of these SEC spring meetings. And there were two main points going into this, and how this affects LSU is what I want to get into coming up next, kind of my preference for what LSU's schedule and their model can look like. I want to get into that coming up next. But first, I want to preface this by saying that they looked at two factors in terms of changing the SEC schedule. Now, they say that the college football playoff was not one of those things that contributed to maybe changing the schedule, maybe not. And I don't believe them, because I do look at this as a potential advantage or disadvantage in terms of one SEC school or even multiple SEC schools getting into the college football playoff. Now, one thing that was not a factor was potential college football playoff expansion. It's not going to happen this upcoming year, but also the contract for the current college football playoff is in effect until, I believe, 2025. So there can still be some changes made. The college football playoff can still expand. I think that those plans were put on hold after Texas and Oklahoma were joining the SEC. And I think that everyone kind of saw through Greg Sankey what he wanted to do to expand the college football playoff in order to get Texas and Oklahoma in there. But it could still expand. So I don't think that expansion was necessarily a factor in this, but the college football playoff is a factor in it for one reason. And that is, does that make the SEC more or less competitive compared to other conferences? If the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Big 12, the ACC, if they're also considering adding another conference game, then that would be kind of even across the board. But if they're not, does adding an extra conference game help or hurt SEC teams getting into the college football playoff? Because I think we've seen you can get in with one loss, but once you get two losses, it's questionable. Three losses is absolutely not. Absolutely not. So I think that would be adding another conference game, and with the SEC being such a competitive football conference, you could make the argument that adding that extra conference game would put the SEC at a disadvantage in getting multiple teams or even just one team into the college football playoff. Let's say, for example, they do adopt the 3-6 model. You expand to 9 conference games. You know, let's say hypothetically LSU, or I'll use a different team because I want to get into LSU in the next segment. But let's say Alabama, for example. Let's say the three teams that they pull in that 3-6 model, they're three constant teams, hypothetically speaking, are Texas A&M, Georgia, and Auburn, just to maintain that Iron Bowl. Let's say Texas A&M it uses their top recruiting class and they are unstoppable. Georgia returns as a national championship favorite, and Auburn gets all their stuff together. And, you know, maybe there's a crazy play, crazy Hail Mary, and they end up beating Alabama. Well, with the cannibalistic nature of the SEC, you could argue that those three teams, if those were Alabama's three constant games, that would put them at a disadvantage over, you know, another team in a different conference. If you're following me here, adding another conference game with how competitive the SEC is would make it more difficult to make it into the college football playoff, I think, is the concern of some of these coaches. So while the expansion of the college football playoff doesn't necessarily play a role here, the competitive nature of the SEC plays a role here, because that's the beauty of college football, is that every single game matters. One single game matters. So adding one single extra conference game, a more competitive game than, say, maybe a cupcake at the beginning of the season, could change the course of that season or the postseason hopes. But also, then again, that's the beauty of college football. You got to compete every single week. Another factor in this is the parity of the votes of the 1-7, 3-6 model. So I think that Greg Sankey made it very clear that he doesn't want to adopt any schedule changes unless it's pretty close to unanimous. And I really don't blame him here. You don't want to instill any big time changes that isn't more widely accepted by the coaches and by the chancellors and ADs of the SEC. So I think, you know, if you see, you know, if the head coaches are voting and 8 head coaches vote for a schedule change and 6 vote against it, well, you're just above 50-50 there. So you're going to have 6 head coaches that are incredibly anti-schedule change. And so that makes it more difficult to adopt. That just causes more conflict. So I think Greg Sankey just wants to have a close to unanimous decision. Whether that means adding a 9th game or not, if every single coach votes against it, then there's your answer there. Then you don't add that 9th game. You don't change the schedule. But if all of them say yes, they're all for it, then that makes it so much more easier to adopt. So those are the two factors going into it is, does this put the SEC at a disadvantage in making the college football playoff? Again, there has yet to be a college football playoff without an SEC team. So I think that adding that 9th game, it's not going to hurt much. It's just going to make a case for an SEC team or teams even stronger because they've beaten an extra conference foe. And, you know, you can probably guess that that's going to be a pretty difficult opponent. So I understand the cannibalistic nature of the SEC, but I'm fully in favor of the 3-6 model, of adding that 9th game. And I'll explain why and how that could affect LSU coming up next after a few words from our sponsors. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Now, we're discussing the SEC spring meetings. Nothing really tangible came out of them. No big time votes, no big time decisions, or clear view looking ahead as to what the SEC scheduling is going to look like. Now, one thing that did seem pretty unanimous, that everyone seemed pretty on board with, is in 2025, if that is the year. Could be sooner, but whatever, no pun intended, but whatever Texas and Oklahoma sooner does join the SEC, I think the SEC coaches as currently constructed have been pretty on board with doing away with divisions. Now, what does that look like? I don't know. Is that pods? Is that, you know, just the 3-6 model continued? I don't know, but they've decided to go away with divisions. Not decided, that's the wrong wording. They're all pretty much on board with it going away with divisions, which is a good thing for LSU because I discussed in the podcast a couple weeks ago about what that would look like for LSU if they maintain the divisions. The smartest, most logical restructuring of the divisions would be as follows. Texas and Oklahoma join the West. Alabama and Auburn join the East to maintain those rivalries, and Missouri joins the West, which only makes sense geographically because Missouri is the furthest West team in the SEC right now. You know, of course, when Texas and OU join the SEC, that'll change, but that's what it would be like. So that would mean that LSU would essentially lose their rivalry either with Alabama or Florida, and I can't imagine a world where there are divisions in the SEC and LSU Florida and LSU Alabama are not part of that constructed schedule. So that's the good thing there. But so with no divisions, what would the schedule look like? 2 of the options thrown out there, 1-7 and 3-6. What does that mean? 1-7 means that each team has one specific rivalry year in and year out, and that's your buddy. That's your guy. That's who you play every single year, and the 7 teams rotate. The other option, and that would maintain 8 games a year. The other option would be 3-6. So you have 3 permanent games and 6 rotating games, and you add that 9th conference game. I think that's the best option here. I think 3-6 is the way to go if you're going to do away with divisions. I think that only having one permanent rival, it doesn't have the same... you know, it doesn't have the same tradition. And I don't know how you could pick just one team for every single SEC team. You know, I feel like at least one, if not several teams in the SEC are kind of going to feel gypped by their one rivalry. And I don't think that having just one permanent game is maintains the tradition enough. I'm such a sucker for tradition in college football, and I just don't think that having one permanent rival is enough. Now, the 3-6 model is perfect because you have three of those permanent games. You have three rivals that you play year in and year out, and it doesn't have to be the same for every team. It's not the pod model where you'd be essentially isolated in your little pod over here and everyone plays each other. You know, Alabama's three teams, you know, Alabama and LSU could play each other, but that doesn't mean that they have to play the other two teams that other team plays. Alabama could play Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU, while LSU plays Alabama, Mississippi State, and Texas A&M. So it provides a little bit more variety there while also maintaining each individual school's rivals. Plus, the six games gives you kind of that same rotation around the SEC. You're still playing a lot of other teams that maybe don't traditionally play in the current division model. You still get enough variety in there while also maintaining some consistencies year in and year out. As you have those three games, those three permanent rivalries that you look forward to each week, each year, and then you also get some variety. So I love that. I'm totally in favor of the 3-6 model. Now you may say, okay, that makes sense, but what about that extra game? I love it. I love it. I am so for LSU playing Georgia or Kentucky or any other team in the SEC year in and year out, or, you know, just switching things up. I'm so much rather watching LSU versus insert SEC opponent here rather than LSU playing, UT San Antonio. No disrespect to UT San Antonio. I don't even know if they've ever played each other, if they're ever on each other's future schedules. However, I would much rather see in conference matchups over some cupcakes. But also, you play 12 games a year. You play 9 conference games. That would still give LSU the ability to schedule a couple cupcakes and maybe some out-of-conference games. Like this year, they're playing Florida State. Love that. Love that a lot. They played UCLA last year. Love that. Love the shakeup. Love the variety. The 9-game conference structure also affords you a couple cupcakes and an out-of-conference game. And I think that's perfect. And I think, too, with the whole argument about making the college football playoff, I think it only makes the case stronger for teams in the SEC. That if they don't only beat 7 conference opponents, but 8, that makes their case so much stronger. Now, of course, not every team in the SEC is going to be super strong year in and year out. I'll use Vanderbilt, for example, because I beat up on Vanderbilt all the time. And a perfect example for a not very difficult in-conference opponent. You're going to play Vanderbilt some years, and maybe playing Vanderbilt doesn't necessarily boost your resume for the college football playoff. But then that could be an easy win. I don't know what Clark Lee is going to do with the Doors moving forward. Maybe he turns that program around. But let's just say right now where Vanderbilt is, it's either an easy win or it's a difficult team in the SEC. And if you beat that team, it only boosts your resume to make the college football playoff. I think it's a win-win situation here. I love the idea of the 3-6 model. But exactly which teams would fit in LSU's 3-6 model? What would be some matchups that you're not willing to part with? And what are some matchups that you would love to see every single year? That's what I want to talk about tomorrow. So we'll get into that on the next podcast, next time I chat with y'all on Locked On LSU. But I appreciate y'all for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Now make your second listen to the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. Rafael Barlow, Richard Stamen, and Sam Ferris, and Lee Thulin give fans an in-depth look into the biggest prospects, the latest player rankings, and of course, the big boards. So follow Locked On NBA Big Board every day in the Odyssey app, YouTube, or whatever you get your podcasts.